Chapter 1. Society addresses me as Lord Julian Caldecott, though as that aristocratic curiosity, a legitimate bastard, I bear no blood relation to Claudius, the late Duke of Waltham. Toward the end of his Grace's life, when he and I were both using canes as more than fashionable accessories, we got on tolerably well. Not so in earlier years, though let it be said, both parties, as well as my mother, had a hand in instigating skirmishes. I survived those battles, and even weathered Waterloo in better shape than many. The worst blows to my body and spirit were dealt long before Wellington's great victory, when I'd been held as a prisoner of war by the French. The guns have gone silent, the ghosts have not. The best medicine for me of late is solitude and quiet. I was thus starting my day with an ancient Sumerian text involving agrarian metaphors and procreation, when Lady Ophelia Oliphant sailed into my study like a 74-gunner bearing down on the French line. "Julian, do instruct your butler that his harumphing and stodging are pointless. I call only when you are on the premises, and his posturing will not serve. I am at home because you pounce at an indecently early hour, Godmamma. Good morning to you." I drew a blank page over my translation. Godmamma could read upside down, and, I am convinced, with her eyes closed, and came around the desk to kiss her ladyship's proffered cheek. She smelled of Bourbon roses and mischief, and in my youth she'd been one of my favourite people. Her ladyship had known considerable sorrow, burying two husbands, a son and a daughter, the latter two in their early childhoods. She banished life's woes with a determination I envied, except when she aimed her schemes at me. Since I'd returned from the battlefields, she'd left me mostly in peace, though the look in her gimlet blue eyes said my reprieve was at an end. "How can it be a good morning," she began, "when you look like a death's head on a mop stick and your hair needs a trim? Young men today might as well be die-away schoolgirls, for all they primp, lisp, and sigh. Back in my day, men could wear the most elegant fashions and still comport themselves like men. You lot, with your scientific pugilism and hungry water, make me bilious." "The only pugilism I engage in of late is verbal, dear lady, and never a drop of hungry water has touched my manly person. Shall I ring for a tray, or will you swan out the door before my poor stodging Harris can heed my summons?"
"You wish."
She settled onto the sofa, her presence a contrast to the masculine appointments and closed curtains of my study. Godmamma had been a beauty, to hear her tell it, and my mother, who would argue with the Almighty over the ideal order of the commandments, did not contradict her. The former beauty still indulged in every fashionable whim her heart desired, or her modistes suggested. She donned pale silk when sprigged muslin would have done nicely, and she wore jewels during daylight hours. Her slippers, gloves, and reticules were exquisitely embroidered, and usually all of a piece. Today's theme was roses and gold. No grand diva ever assembled her stage appearances as carefully as Godmamma put herself together, simply to disturb my peace on a Tuesday morning. My mother muttered about Lady Ophelia's flamboyant style, but I was nobody to begrudge Godmamma her crotchets. One coped with grief as best one could, as I, half of England and much of the continent, had occasion to know.
"Cease pacing about, dear boy,"
her ladyship patted the place beside her.
"I come to you in my hour of need, and you must not disappoint me."
I settled a good 2 feet away from her ladyship. I wasn't keen on anybody making free with my person, and Godmamma was extravagantly affectionate. I had a valet. Sterling tended to my clothing, and I tended to me. I was working up to allowing him to trim my hair, but until that day, an old-fashioned queue served well enough.